Well, you can go around during the whole day and just think what you're going to do. You can have a good intention, etc. But to really get things done, it's really important. It is the outcomes that you can see that really counts.
Hey everyone, Gordon here. Thanks for joining us on the Get Stuff Done podcast. If you're with us for the first time, a very warm welcome. If you're a regular listener, well, thanks so much for coming back. You found your way to the How to Get Stuff Done series. In this series, through our guests' experiences and sharing of their insights, we learn how they get stuff done, how they have got to where they are today by sharing some of their techniques and strategies for doing so. I hope you find it both interesting and insightful, but also practical at the same time. Now let's see who our guest is today. Hello and welcome back to the Get Stuff Done podcast. I'm your host, Gordon, and today I'm absolutely delighted to be joined by Eric Brunegard. He is the Senior Business Segment Manager of Digital Solutions at Roche Diagnostics. And Eric is somebody who I wanted to bring onto the podcast as a guest because he is somebody who is incredibly international in both his background and experience. He was originally born in South Korea and was adopted to Sweden at the age of one, being part of the world's first Korean adoptee movement into Sweden during the 80s. He speaks, I think, five languages, which we can get into in a little while. Across his career of more than 20 years, spanning business development, sales, marketing, but mostly in the area of IT solutions. He has a very interesting perspective on cross-cultural management, which I think will be maybe the focus of what we talk about today. But first of all, Eric, thank you so much for being my guest today.
Thank you very much. I love to be here.
And so, Eric, I'm going to jump in with the question that I always ask all my guests right at the start, which is getting stuff done. What does it mean to you?
It means a lot. You know, you can go around during the whole day and just think what you're going to do. You can have good intentions, etc. But to really get things done, it's really important. It is the outcomes that you can see that really counts. So to do it as soon as possible, if not now, that is my mantra.
I see. Okay.
And you should actually plan short-term, long-term during your day in order to get it done. I usually try to do the hardest, most complicated stuff first, and then you can can maybe relax later during the day. That is my strategy.
What are some of the hardest or most complicated things that you're facing? What are those things that you come up against most?
It could be, for example, a complicated project with a lot of stakeholders, both internal, external. It can be a project that in some parts, for example, a launch didn't go so well. It is projects or assignments where you might not see the outcome clear. And you need to both analyze in beforehand, but you also need to weigh your words very well and carefully. I think that requires priority first during the day, at least for me.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. I think it's interesting that you mentioned about the kind of as quickly as possible, as fast as possible in the work that you do. How do you go about making sure you do the most impactful things first? Because if we try to do everything as quickly as possible, we'll probably be in firefighting mode. What are some of the, I don't know, what's your method for kind of deciding what should be done first?
I think that you need to always keep your final desired outcome in mind first and really see if I create these kind of outcomes, what sort of impact can it do and what can it relate to? And that actually decides for me, at least, in which way you should prioritize it. So I think really you should keep the outcome always top of mind first, not start with what you should do, but the actual result.
It
is both good for private stuff, but also for the professional stuff as well.
Oh, interesting. Yes. I mean, obviously, the main thrust of our discussions on the podcast are around business. But I guess, yes, also, we should also be aware of that impact and outcome from in personal situations as well. I want to, since you've mentioned that, do you find that there has been a change in professional relationships during your career compared to like where they are now versus how they were when you started?
Yes, I think that when I started my career, I very much thought of where should I start? Should it be in a startup company, a small company, or should it be in a big enterprise? I think that you really need to network a lot in order to find to get to your starting point. And I think my professional relationships at my career start was, of course, they were, you know, very immature in comparison, and they were very short. They were very, you know, at an initial stage. By natural causes, I think that my professional relationships has become more mature. They have more depth. And I think also it was more like speed dating when I started my career. You needed to meet a lot of people. Now I think I'm more selective. In meeting people, and I think that's good.
Yeah, I would agree that. I think I've just got some background noise coming on here. Let me just put a quick mark on the screen. One second. Oh, there we go. Okay.
We can retake that if you want.
Yeah, we'll do that again. I would agree there, Eric. I think that I think it's almost natural at the start of our careers that we kind of want to go for quantity over quality. And then over time, we realize that actually it's quality, not quantity, that counts. And it maybe that is a very natural transition of age as well, perhaps, but also a necessity of youth, depending on how you look at it. But at the same time, I guess also we make a large, broad network in the early stage, and that becomes a foundation for a good network later on, right? You know, over time, if I think back to the different kind of pockets of my network, how they have developed over time, and you know, I will have my 20th anniversary since graduating university this year, and you know, there's a very small number of the best friends that I will celebrate that with. They are the only ones in that sense. So yes, and I'm also curious about, from those relationships that get made, then when it comes to working relationships, how has that kind of evolved? And maybe it's office culture, maybe it's company culture, but just ways of working. What do you see as some of the big differences from when you started?
I think this has been very much depending on the company culture of each company that I have joined. I think that has been immensely different. For example, I think when working for example, American companies, I joined GE Healthcare. I think that the American culture in GE Healthcare, to me at least, at the local Swedish affiliate, was kind of influenced by the American style. Everything was wonderful. Everything was great. It was superlatives every day. But it was also very energizing in the way you both approach people, but also the way you kept relationships. People were very outspoken and they were very, very social. In other companies, the difference between and the lines between private and professional was maybe not so strict, especially when it comes to Swedish companies. I think that personalization and also the intimate contact between the employer and the employee is a typical trait for the Nordic touch and the Nordic approach on how you are dealing from day to day at the office, for example. They are asking about how are your children sick? Did you have a good Christmas? Which was holiday did you go to, etc. Those kind of questions. When I worked in Switzerland, for example, with Roche at the Roche headquarters, it was very Swiss, very formal. It was with titles and with almost every day a tie on, for example. You should also preferably wear a suit, etc. And I like that. I have nothing against it, but I clearly see the differences.
Yes. Yeah, you're right. It's not that one is better than another per se,
No.
but well, I guess in certain circumstances one is better than the other. You know, if you isolate one thing, but in totality, I don't think so. Yeah, I mean, I also remember my first full work experience in Germany at Siemens, and there was an expectation when we go in the morning that we greet every member of the team. So we make,
Exactly.
even though we're on our way to our desk. But before doing so, or immediately after arriving at desk, we should go around and greet every member in their office, because everybody was kind of split out into offices at that time. So yeah, we're very, very different to when I think about other companies that I've been with. And I'm also always curious about working for a global company in a foreign country from the global HQ. And whether, because I worked for Maersk, a Danish company, for a few years and had the opportunity to see their offices in many different countries. And it was always interesting to see where the Danish national culture was coming in those local cultures to make a company culture that was definitely had some Danish, strong Danish influence. And so I'm curious. You said Roche at headquarters is just Swiss. What about Roche in Sweden?
Yeah, Roche in Sweden, I would say, is very Swedish in a way. We
Okay.
have in our lounge, coffee lounge, we have the Swiss flag, of course. We celebrate the Swiss roots, but I also see very visibly how the Swedish approach influences a lot of things. For example, a very strong focus on fitness and that you together with others meet regularly on a regular basis to do yoga, to do walks regularly. It's very much focusing on your well-being, very important to have the Christmas party, and also not to forget the Swedish fika. It is the Swedish name for the coffee break. So
Right.
the coffee break is extremely important for chit chat and for socializing. Every Swede, regardless of where they are, they really keep the coffee sacred, and with this also the fika.
And so then what has been the impact of that in the COVID and now post-COVID environment in terms of being able to have that important kind of chit chat, that water cooler moment?
That is an extremely good question. To me, I think the COVID years, I call it COVID years because it was to me between 2020 to 22. The streets of Stockholm were deserted. People didn't go by the tube anymore. You didn't visit the office. And if you visited the office, you needed to declare and report that in beforehand because there were
Yes.
limited numbers of people at the office that were allowed.
Sure.
So I think it actually really had a very, very strong negative impact on the socialization. I really also know that people felt very isolated. And that was also enhanced, would I say, with the Swedish way of socializing. You are maybe not the most outspoken person if you're a Swede among others. It takes time to start talking. So I think the face-to-face element is extremely important when it comes to Swedish work environments. And to have fika in front of a monitor or on a screen, that's not the same thing, I'm sure. I have been part of fikas and some beer tasting events in front of the monitor during the COVID years, and that was extremely awkward. I can promise you that.
There's no doubt about it. And so then in terms of getting stuff done beyond yourself, when it comes to influencing others, managing teams,
Yes.
leading others, what's your kind of personal style in that regard?
My personal style, both when interacting with customers and with my team, is always to create a sort of safe space. I believe also that you should create a sort of personal touch on it. so that the person, the people that are listening to you, maybe an audience, don't feel that they are just one among others. I believe that you should have a approach with a narrative, a personal touch. And I think that is really, really important. And I think that leads the way to a more outspoken and open environment that actually have benefits, both for a meeting, but also for the team as such. That is at least my aim. Succeed every time, that is another discussion, but that is right. At least my aim.
Yeah. And in your kind of experience, what's the approximate length of period of time that it takes to go from a first meeting to a status where those parameters and ways of working have been fully understood along with that personal touch?
I think that to me have been very much dependent on how many face-to-face interactions you have been able to complete.
Okay, interesting.
When you actually are interacting with a mix of teams that are, for example, remote in other countries or in other cities, and don't have the possibility to interact face-to-face, I think that can actually be a disadvantage. And then it will require more time for everybody to feel fully adjusted and fully at ease, so to speak. I think that is really important. So, for example, if I start and initialize a project, I think to work remote is totally okay, but I try at least in the beginning, at the end, try to arrange some sort of face-to-face meetings, kickoff meetings, for example, that are always face-to-face in order to really emphasize the personal touch so that you can actually feel the energy. I know that I almost sounds like a yoga guru or something when I say talk about energies, no. But I really think that that is kind of important.
No, I think increasingly, in a good way, people have become more aware of energy, and especially when it comes to how it affects others. I think in the past, we just generally, people, if they had a certain position, there were expectations of how they should be. And likewise, other people, maybe junior members or those reporting to a manager should also be that way, like a certain way. And I think, obviously, there's a certain helpfulness of defining roles and boundaries, but at the end of the day, people are all different, and people interact and work in very different ways. And so I think we're generally speaking at a better place where people are a little bit more reflective and analytical about building relationships, and maybe that extra care, maybe that takes longer ultimately, but I do think that if we do take that care, better relationships are built.
Definitely,
as opposed
yes.
to, if we think of the army as a classic example, where from day one, black and white, what your role is, what your role is, and there's no question, there's no dissension, there's also no opportunity for innovation and fresh ideas at the same time. The army is very good at doing what it does in that context, and that's not necessarily applicable for the modern workplace.
Yes.
So I want to get a little bit into the cross-cultural element now, because we talked about the Swiss origins of your current company, but you yourself have worked in many different countries.
Yes.
I hope you're enjoying this episode. I just wanted to remind you to click subscribe if you haven't done so yet. By subscribing and following the podcast, you'll get each and every episode automatically pop up on your playlist every week, so you won't miss any. Thank you so much for being with us. Now let's get back to our guest. Where would be the country that surprised you the most, that it was very unexpectedly different to how you thought it was going to be?
My answer may be surprising, but I think Denmark, to me as a Swede, was the biggest surprise. Denmark is maybe one of the it's actually one of the closest, geographically closest countries to Sweden. Swedes usually go on summer vacation to Denmark.
Okay.
We go there on holidays. There are so many historic events that involves both countries. But actually to work there and to manage teams and to be at the office in Denmark, really, it really strengthens the impression how different we are, Swedes and Danes. Danes are very, very different. They are more outspoken. They're maybe more extremely direct. And to me, I think they are having totally different management expectations than Swedes have. Swedes are very collective. They are very adapting. They want to fit in the group. I think they're almost like the Japanese of Scandinavia in many ways. And actually, Swedes are usually very fond of Japan. And that is
I've heard that before. Yeah.
Mm. And Danes, to me, in their style, is they are more similar to the American way, almost. They have they know what they want. They are very direct. They never go around and indirectly listening to things. They are just saying what they want.
Well, I mean, to the listeners who are from around the world, but predominantly not Scandinavia, who might be thinking that maybe even they think that all Europeans are the same. But actually, not only that, is that within the region of Scandinavia, within Europe, that there are also significant differences. I think that is a really good takeaway, that we don't take things for granted just because someone is, like you say, a neighbor country. It doesn't mean, so often these companies companies have to do it. I don't know if they have to do it, but through force of efficiency at some level, they group countries, right? And you sometimes end up with, well, APAC is obviously one incredibly geographically broad one, EMEA becomes another incredibly diverse region, but of course there's so much diversity within that. And so then on a practical sense, what does that mean, maybe advice for Swedes when going into Denmark, what would be maybe some of the things that they should kind of be aware of, or how could they more comfortably navigate that?
For example, I think in a Swedish corporate setting, it's extremely important to have a consensus, to find a common stand for next steps. But in Denmark, I discovered very clearly at times that it's very much important for the CEO and for the leader to actually dictate the next steps. They are not waiting for a consensus. Consensus is just a waste of time, basically. So it's very important for Swedes and other people, I think. So when they're interacting at a corporate level in Denmark, to be more outspoken, more clear, and more definite when it comes to what they want. And if they're not, choose that approach. It can cause impatience, it can cause irritation, and people may even question if you really know what you want. So I think that can be misunderstood sometimes. Mm-hmm. Swedes wants to be polite and they want to be focused on what people think in the whole team. Danes don't really care. They are thinking about the result.
And it's funny, when you were mentioning those things, it echoed to me exactly how the advice comes for employees of global companies in Korea when they are going overseas, how they should be if they want to be able to be heard and be able to actually succeed. And we're talking about the employees of global companies in Korea who are already the relatively most outspoken, confident, willing to challenge, not necessarily consensus driven. So relatively speaking, it was interesting to hear that. If we just step into kind of like corporate strategy, do you have any thoughts about how national culture can be a strength when doing business overseas?
I think differently that national strategy, if we're talking about internal collaboration, if we talk about a sort of emotional stance, I think definitely it can be a success factor overseas. I think that can create endurance and also patience when it comes to how you interact and how you plan your activities when you go and enter foreign markets. I think some companies, when they don't have that kind of emotional stamina or sort of corporate identity based on natural traits, I think that then I think the time they can endure is maybe shorter. And I think that can actually make the whole time to market more difficult. I think Korean companies, they are extremely ambitious in Europe. I think they're extremely focused. And when it comes to both startups and global companies of Korean origin in Sweden, you can find them a lot here. You can even find a SME center in Stockholm, actually, only for Korean companies that want to test their digital solutions in Europe. Then they have a startup center for doing that in Stockholm. And I think that that's symbolizing and really says something about how they see Sweden as an innovative market, but also a safe space for innovative solutions. I think that is a good, it's a good credibility for both Sweden, but also for Korea.
Yeah, you know, I would definitely agree to that. And I certainly saw through my time in Korea as a British person that there was a very natural matching of the Korean industries and the German industries. And because of that, those, obviously the Korea developed as a fast follower, predominantly in manufacturing and, you know, industrial sectors. And so the strength and the depth of experience is there, which is like it's kind of a fertile ground for the already more well-established German companies to come and do business there. And I think the second part of that is, you know, if Korean companies were looking at the world, you know, why would they choose such a small market, relatively speaking, like Sweden to go and do business? Because it shows that actually, despite the size, that there are special benefits that can be achieved there. And I think, you know, maybe Singapore is a great example as the hub, you know, to unlock the rest of Asia. I think Korea could be a great example for Northeast Asia, you know, with the two big neighbors either side, maybe being too big to tackle at first, therefore take a mid-sized market like Korea and go for there. So, yeah, I think a lot of different opportunities there. When it comes to doing business with different nationalities and then using your different languages to do that, do you find yourself communicating? Obviously, you're communicating in a different language, but do you find yourself actually working in a different style? Does that come through? Have you been made aware of that yourself or by others, perhaps?
Yeah, I think language really have impact on both your way on expressing things, but also how on your work style. Being in Korea with such an intensive culture, I really think that I realized very, very fast that you need to actually adapt to the much higher pace of how people approach assignments in Korea, how they are actually working, how fast they are completing stuff, for example. It's not only the long work hours that I'm thinking of, it's also the way of always looking on how to be the most efficient, how to actually find the shortest, fastest route. And I also think that Koreans are looking on both the work process and the final result in a different way. I think the journey of product development is as much as important as the final result for a Korean company. And I think that makes the whole way of approaching work so much different. They are constantly learning about new things. And I think it's more important to actually analyzing how your solution or service actually can evolve and not only the final static result. And I think that is actually very different because I think for other nations, other countries, I think the final result is always what you think of. You think about the alpha version, beta version, et cetera, et cetera. But I think Koreans are almost obsessed of being, learning more, being better, working smarter, etc., etc. And that actually had an indirect impact on myself to work in the same way. And also, I think, of course, speaking about languages, each language have their own different culture and atmosphere, of course. Speaking German, speaking Korean, or speaking English, you can express different things, right? You have peculiar expressions in all languages, and that makes it so interesting.
And the very essence of that is there has been a list compiled of words which don't exist in any other language. And
yes.
So I'm not sure if every language has words that don't exist in any other languages, but there's definitely, I mean, there are some languages that have just have more words, full stop. So they're more likely to be those. But interestingly, German and Japanese are quite prolific on this list because the nature of their language is very specific and explicit around that thing, whether it's, you know, a tangible item or an emotion or even a color. And so there's some really good examples of those, which I like. I also speak German, and I like because it just, the word is exactly what it is, like exactly what it does, or it's just so precise. Whereas if you don't have that specific word for it, you've got to use a whole load of other words to get to the same point, which is an interesting thing to look at.
Yeah, and I think I'm so astonished so many times when I see on the loan words that from Sweden that have invaded other languages. I'm talking about smorgasbord
invaded
or ombudsman,
or
for example.
Invaded or adopted?
Yeah, let's discuss that. I kind of feel uncertain why, for example, smorgasbord has been a success, in a word of success in so many languages, including the English one, when you certainly also have kind of buffets that you have been offering and enjoying during the past of time. But who knows?
Maybe a sign to delve into more linguistics, but I would hazard a guess that the onomatopoeic nature of words will have a big impact on that. If I think about the Indian word bungalow, which we have taken, or I think about the German word Rucksack, smorgasbord as the example there as well, perhaps could be one of the factors there. On that note, Eric, we have got to draw this episode to a close. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much
sharing,
for having me.
It's been a really good discussion. And if any of the listeners would like to get in touch with you or reach out, what would be the best way for them to do so?
They can connect via Instagram. They can also connect via LinkedIn. So
great.
I'm present on both those social platforms.
Perfect. Well, we will be sure to link those in the show notes. But once again, Eric, thank you so much for being with us today.
It has been a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you, everybody. And this has been another great episode. And remember, let's get stuff done. And that's another episode of the Get Stuff Done podcast. Thank you so much for being with us. I hope you enjoyed it. And if you'd like to get involved and you have someone who you think would be a good guest for the podcast, please drop me a message and I'll be happy to get in touch. Alternatively, if you would like to share this episode on your social media, that would also be extremely appreciated by us. Thank you so much once again. Remember, let's get stuff done.